Now we both kinda like it. Now we both kinda know that if we're ever gonna make it, we just need to let go.
You're listening to the Crosscutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on September 19th, 2016. My guest today is a software developer and consultant with Surge, George Maurer. How are you?
I'm good.
Let's talk about the history of the web a bit. What is something that's gone away from the web that you're glad has gone away?
Okay, well, it's going to be a little cheating to say this, but let's say the marquee and blink tags. But that's cheating. So why don't I kind of replace that with just an interesting thing I found out about them. Okay. So part of the reason I'm talking about this is I've been doing a lot of research into the history of the web and where it all got started. And it's fascinating because all that stuff is out there just on, you know, message boards. Netscape Navigator introduced the blink tag actually on during a drunken conversation Lumen Tooley had with a developer, and it was introduced as an Easter egg. No, they didn't tell anyone. And then Microsoft, once people started finding out, Microsoft responded with a marquee tag. And in order to get rid of them, they actually had to meet up at a conference and have like a stand-up style, okay, let's stop supporting these things.
It's the dangers of drinking and coding.
Yeah.
All right, let's, on the flip side of that, what's something that has gone away that you wish kind of didn't?
Oh, man. So there's a lot of stuff, especially when you look early in the web. So some of this is going to segue into predictions, but sure. I think XHTML has gone away probably a bit too soon, by which I'm saying it's not, you know, I was writing web pages in 2006, 2007, and you'd write a web page and it would fail the validator with like 700 errors and you'd be crazy about it. I'm not missing those days, but the idea for XHTML was a good idea. Again, if you go back and read the archives, read what people, how the web developed and what people were thinking at the time, there was this very basic contrast between most of the people who were developing the web, who were academics, who were very focused on things like keeping it clean, keeping the syntax really semantically meaningful, and then guys like Mark Andreessen, who were actually developing the browsers, and who, for whom the biggest concern was, you know, picking up market share in this giant market that they were creating, and they're just dropping features. So, for example, the IMG tag, you can go back and read the email chain on it where Mark Andreessen proposes, he says people want to put images in, and then Tim Berners-Lee and a lot of people respond, it's like, that, yes, but that doesn't really make sense. Images shouldn't be any different from like video or audio or like embedded applications. Basically, he comes back after a couple of days of discussion and he says, yes, but this is what I need right now and I'm doing it, and that's how we get the IMG tag. And I think XHTML was an attempt to course correct for a lot of this stuff. And unfortunately, it did die. I think that it really does hold back the web in terms of semantic web, in terms of accessibility and so on, not to have the ability to like really easily write HTML parsers.
Yeah, it's another example of the tension between academic and practical that we see all the time in computer programming. Just for the record, can you briefly discuss the difference between XHTML and HTML?
There was several different versions. So HTML kind of sort of looks like XML, but isn't, right?
You can write
stuff without closing tags or even self-closing tags, and I'll figure it out. And that actually goes back like a really long way, again, to the very beginning. If you look at sample stuff they're putting out there, it's like the P tags with no closing tags. The thing is that when HTML was first proposed, it was done so as a dialect of this other kind of meta language markup thing called SGML. And it was like a very clever marketing maneuver on Tim Berners-Lee part, because basically he got to have access to that entire community. And for the community, it was great because they could use all the SGML-specific tools in order to quickly create. And if you look, there's like tons of new web browsers being created. As it got away from that, and as it kind of got more and more complex and more stuff that the browser has to infer correctly, even if people type it incorrectly, that's where we started getting into trouble, where it's now really, really difficult to create your own web browser. And XML was an attempt to fix that by saying, hey, all right, let's take a step back and let's write our HTML using proper XML principles, and which where XML, a lot of people don't know this, was actually invented as a simpler way of SGML. And lots of people have dealt with like really complex XML things are saying, how could it possibly be simpler? But it is, and it wasn't really meant to be abused in a lot of the ways that it has been. So there was actually a 1.1 spec where there was just like slow, gradual movement. This is what we all remember from like the mid-2000s, where it was like where you would validate your page and say, no, you have to close these tags and you have to quote your attributes and so on. And then there was an XHTML2 spec, which was being worked on, which was going to really get back to the core and the basics, but it was going to be backwards incompatible with HTML, which meant all the browsers would have to support it at the same time. And if people wanted to write pages for it, they would have to really change their style of writing. And that's what ultimately failed. And, after many years, didn't really make much of a mark. And it is a shame because it's massively complex to write an HTML parser nowadays. There's a couple per platform at most.
All right, so you want to get into some predictions here. I know you've got a lot of them. Let's frame it this way. Can you give me a prediction that you think is relatively safe, relatively likely? One prediction that's maybe a little more out there, maybe not as safe. And then one prediction that's just way, way out there, just in crazy town.
We'll do the three different parts of web programming, JavaScript, HTML, and CSS. Okay. So JavaScript, I think within, let's say, 3 years, we're going to see a top 20 website that is really not using JavaScript at all as far as running in the client. By which I mean, I think the big thing in town there is WebAssembly and ASM.js. And basically once that really gets picked up by all browsers, that kind of gets rid of a lot of reason to not take, you know, your Ruby application, write some bindings for a web browser on it, compile your entire Ruby runtime into ASM or into WebAssembly and send it to the browser to just run as pretty much native Ruby. Okay, I don't actually think Ruby would be a language, but something like Go or Rust might actually be really good fits for this sort of thing, and probably some other languages too. So I think within 3 years, we'll see a top 20 website that's not really written in JavaScript at all, and I don't mean a transpiles to JavaScript thing. And I think within 5 years, it'll become increasingly unlikely for any new projects to be started using JavaScript.
Wow. So is this a safe prediction or is this a way out there prediction?
I think that's actually a fairly safe prediction. I mean, we've been trying to get away from JavaScript for a long time. it was Silverlight, Flash, everything under the sun. We've been trying to do it. If you go back and actually look at what happened when they were creating JavaScript. So I want to be clear. JavaScript wasn't based on Java. The initial 10 days that Brendan Eich had to put it together, he didn't actually base on Java. And if I'm wrong on that, maybe you can have Brendan Eich on the show and he can...
I'd love to.
Yeah, and he can correct me. But if you look at the press release about JavaScript and you look at any of the stuff that they were saying about it at the time, the basic idea was that there would be Java in the web browser. Mm. And Java would be like what people would build up controls in and like really complex stuff in. And then JavaScript would be like script kiddies would do to like come and stitch all those controls together. Well, the first part of that didn't happen. But that means that the JavaScript as a language, even with the paltry changes that we've seen in the last 20 years, was not really designed for what we're using it for. And that's fine. It's a fine language. It's one that surprisingly stood the test of time. But I think once the possibility is there to jump ship, everyone's going to go. It'll be very quick.
This is a prediction that I really hope you're right about. And it's one I've been hearing for years with various technologies, but I really do hope you're right at some point.
Well, Brendan Eich himself is behind WebAssembly. I mean, he's writing it. I mean, it's already implemented in some browsers, so it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, Microsoft, the entire company, was behind Silverlight, and we saw how that went. So I'll reserve judgment until it actually happens. All right, now what about a prediction that's maybe a little more out there when it's not quite as safe?
I think a little more out there, I'm going to go ahead and say XHTML or something similar to it will make a comeback. And I don't think it'll happen in a way that'll bother anyone. Basically, I think I'll put myself at like 60% on this. You know, like I said, XHTML is a good idea. It's great for accessibility. It's great for semantic web. The problem is that nobody feels like writing that anymore. The thing is that a lot of people don't actually write HTML anymore. Now that we've got React and other stuff that's based on virtual DOM, even frameworks like Angular that are writing stuff for us, we're actually writing this weird like JavaScript HTML-y thing, and it's generating our HTML for us, or it's communicating directly to the browser for us, or so on. And now everyone's talking about going isomorphic with that, where the server can actually generate all these things. Well, okay, once you do that, maybe your framework can actually generate XHTML compatible code or whatever, XHTML3, which doesn't exist yet as far as I know. It can generate something like that. And what I'm really envisioning then is someone's not going to write a browser that'll take over the world just by using this stuff. But maybe in certain subdomains, I could see it happening. So I could see maybe websites where you know they're running and they have isomorphic JavaScript that's generating on the server enabled, and a request comes in and basically says, all right, give me, you know, I'm on Firefox, give me regular HTML, and it does and spits back the regular application like it does now. But if a different, you know, one of these new age browsers come in and asks for XHTML3 or whatever, it can that same framework might as well generate the XHTML3 compatible stuff and throw it back. And again, I'm not saying it's XHTML3. I don't know about the specific format, but I think something that will fill that gap of making it easier to parse and work with HTML and build your own HTML parser is going to come along.
Very interesting. So let's go to my favorite one, which is a prediction that's just way, way out there in crazy town.
Yeah. So CSS, if you go back and look at its history, this is where I'm drawing all this stuff from. It's kind of random that we have CSS the way it is. There were other languages around that were really, really good. There's an article on the Eager blog called The Languages That Were Almost CSS, and that's like a great primer on this. There was one, for example, called Diesel. I think that's how it's pronounced. It's D-S-S-S-L. Which was a form of Scheme. If you look through history enough, you'll notice that like every single technology ever, they need a language. They say, oh, someone comes up with one that's based on Scheme. Everyone likes it, and then nobody ends up using it. Like that's the law of technology I've seen over and over and over again. So if you look at CSS, there's all these other alternatives. And the reason CSS particularly ends up becoming a big deal is because they have this really interesting concept that they come up with where, well, every single rule that you apply in is actually going to, it's going to let you control how much of the page authors preferences to apply and how much of the browser users preferences to apply. So the idea was the browser user would have, you know, a preference that would say all fonts should be in blue, and then the page author should say all fonts should be in red. Take 50% of the browser users' feelings on this into account, and then the fonts would render in purple. And you had all these demos with like sliders and stuff like that. That's what the cascading part and cascading style sheets ends up referring to. You might notice that didn't happen.
Right.
But it got people talking, and because people were talking, and because CSS was relatively easy to implement, and because it could render, it could be applied to pages before the entire page was loaded, that's what ended up winning. And that's kind of a historical accident. So we could have much better languages. And I think that we will. And this is an out there prediction. I don't know exactly what it'll look like. Once it's something, I don't think it's going to be SAS or CSS or something that compiles to CSS exactly. I think it'll be some combination of JavaScript or client-side language and style sheets. I think that it will bring a lot of those abilities back. You know, like the Diesel style scheme abilities where you could set up functions and set variables and do calculations and all of that. And it would actually optimize it for you. And I think a lot of that is going to come up once we start focusing on virtual reality and augmented reality in the browser. I think every single declarative language eventually becomes a procedural language. So I think this is one of those that we're going to need more oomph to CSS to really support a lot of that stuff. And I think some sort of abstraction over that could be due.
All right. Some of these things you mentioned, I'm going to add to the show notes, and you can go check those out at crosscuttingconcerns.com. Is there anything else before we wrap up you'd like to promote?
I have a blog, georgemaurer.net. I've actually started a blog post. I'm going to write a blog post about kind of each of these predictions and go into more in depth and why I think that and put a bunch of references in there. Yeah, you can check it out. I have the first one on XHTML up, but I will be working on the others following.
My guest today has been George Maurer. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Matthew.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves 2016. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. The hosting for this podcast was made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Skype, Audacity, and Camtasia Recorder. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy their music on Amazon or iTunes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on a future episode, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com and submit your name and idea.